Blog Talk Radio.
The 9/11. Jesse came up with a good idea.
Yep.
Let me test my speakers here on this, and we should be on our way, I hope. Audio. Testing 1, 2. I'm testing it through there. Okay. Let me in, somebody. All right. I don't know what the hell that was. Yes, we can hear. Okay, please wait. The webinar will begin soon. Now, okay, well, we'll just carry on till this webinar starts.
Is Adrian on here right now? Is she first one?
Hold on here, Jimmy.
Bring her on, because I got something I got to verify with her, and it's right up her alley of information.
Well,
by the way, hello.
Go ahead, Jimmy. Oh, I'm
recording in progress.
Hold on. Recording in progress. What the hell does that mean? Okay, they brought up starting soon. They haven't started it, and I think we're going to be able to hear this. What the hell is that? Uh-huh. Okay, they haven't started yet. What the hell? I don't know what I'm doing, folks. Okay.
No, I think you're good, Don. I think you're good because if you said it's shown recording, it just hasn't brought it up yet.
Okay.
Right. He's waiting like he always does. That's why I was wondering if Adrian and we could talk about something that I know she wanted to bring up.
Yeah, you sent an email to me about something, and I want. Here's Adrian right now. Adrian.
Good evening. How's everyone?
Well, we're
doing great. Good evening.
For you. Waiting for you,
I'm
like good. We always
I'm usually
do.
I'm usually here before the show starts.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Okay, but I talk on the over-the-counter stuff that you included me in. That was so cool.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, did you get all of your stuff that you ordered?
Only. Well, I just got the newsletter that I thought you forwarded to me how the amount had been increased.
No, I didn't do that.
Well, whatever you said.
I haven't even gotten that one.
From what I understand, starting January 1st, folks, we're up to $200 for each you and your spouse, so a total of $400 in my case anyway. And I thought you knew that because it looked like that email came from you, Adrian.
Well, that's, you know what, that's just wonderful.
Oh, it was good.
That the Viva is doing something.
Or
extra.
I'd like to recognize and thank UAW President Sean Fain for spending time with us in these crucial final hours. I also want to thank Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who always stands 10 toes down on the side of workers and working families. Big thank you to our speakers, Joseph Givarjis, Executive Director of Our Revolution, Sunrise Movement Organizer, Shiva Raj Bhandari, Josh Gondelman, East Council Member of the Writers Guild of America, and Toledo Assembly Plant Worker, Jermaine Land. A special thank you to our allies and co-sponsors for tonight, Center for Popular Democracy Action, Detroit Action, Jobs for Justice, Move On, Relay, Our Revolution, People's Action, SDIU, Standing Up for Racial Justice, Sunrise Movement, and the United We Dream Action. We are here tonight for two reasons. The first is corporate greed. The big three automakers are raking in record profits, and that prosperity has not been shared with workers. It's yet another data point in the lie that there is trickle-down economics that trickles down to all of us, and the numbers don't lie. The big three have taken in billions of dollars in profits and have rewarded their CEOs with obscene amounts of money in the process. Meanwhile, the people who are directly responsible for those record profits have seen their wages fail to keep up with inflation. We're also here because we are in this together. Whether you're a writer trying to make it in Hollywood, a barista with big dreams at Starbucks, or working at a plant in order to assemble the cars that line our streets, you deserve to hear. And let me be clear, at the heart of this are the stories we tell ourselves and the stories we allow others to tell about us. There are members of the press and chaos agents on social media that will cynically and falsely try to portray this as a story of worker greed. They'll seize on the fact that UAW workers are asking for a 40% increase without noting skyrocketing CEO pay. The bosses want us squabbling over crumbs to distract us from the other 99% of the pie that workers rightfully deserve. Auto companies have been recipients of billions of our money, both to keep them afloat in catastrophic times and to support a green energy transition. Those public dollars are not for CEO pocketbooks, they're for all of us. That is the story. And our job is to give people that story. A story, a narrative that says we can have control of our communities and our workplaces. A story that says we can all eat and we can eat well without fighting for crumbs and punching down on others who have less. This is our mission. And it's a mission President Fain outlined on CNN the other day. And I don't know if the anchor was a supporter throwing a softball question or doing the work of the bosses when she asked, what would you say to workers who want a 40% raise? And without hesitation, President Fain calmly replied, they should join a union. Comrades, friends, that is why this fight and the fight of the Hollywood writers, the Starbucks workers, and every other worker organizer, it's so critical and so important. The more we fight, the more we win. The more we inspire others to do the same, and it continues on and on. That's why the historic deal the Teamsters won last month for UPS workers is a big deal. Each win puts more wind in the sails of workers and worker power. And when the UAW wins, it'll provide momentum for the next fight. When we win these fights, we show people that coalitions built on multi-generational, multi-racial solidarity work. When we win, we take back our communities. We take back our workplaces and defeat the bosses. I want to thank you all again for joining us tonight and pass the mic to my friend and comrade, Brandon Snyder, Executive Director of Detroit Action.
Thanks, Maurice. Good evening, folks, and what up, though, to everybody in Detroit. My name is Brandon Snyder. I'm the Executive Director at Detroit Action. We're a grassroots, community-based organization dedicated to fighting for working class people, fighting for economic justice, housing, and racial justice here in Michigan. Funny enough, Detroit Action, we call ourselves a little union for the hood because of our focus on empowering the working class. It's an homage to labor movement and to unions like the UAW who have played and continue to play a role in lifting up Black, Brown, and low-income families economically. I was born and raised in a union household. My family, like so many others, moved to Detroit in the 1930s and 40s for good jobs, good neighborhoods, and good schools. Those good jobs and good neighborhoods were created because labor unions like the UAW fought for them. Detroit has such a rich history as a union town, dating back to the early 20th century when the UAW was founded. The city has been a beacon of hope for countless families, particularly Black workers who migrated from the South to find better opportunities. Since Detroit became known as the Motor City, unions have been instrumental in securing fair wages, safe working conditions, and access to health care and education for generations of Detroiters. And that's why we're all here today, to stand in solidarity with the auto workers who are demanding fair compensation for their hard work and dedication. These workers are the backbone of Detroit and cities and towns across the country. Their fight for better working conditions, not only for themselves, but also for future generations of workers. It's now my distinct honor to introduce our guest speaker today, Representative Rashida Tlaib. Representative Tlaib, Rashida, as she likes to be called, Representative Tlaib, has been a tireless champion of the working class, not only in the city of Detroit, but across the nation. She understands the struggles of the working class, particularly those from marginalized communities, and are deeply intertwined with the fight for economic justice. She has consistently advocated for policies that uplift working families, supporting initiatives to expand home ownership opportunities, to reduce racial and socioeconomic segregation in our nation's schools, and restore the rights of workers with the PRO Act. Representative Tlaib knows that unions are a cornerstone of economic empowerment, and she has been a vocal advocate for workers' rights, fair wages, and better conditions for all. Thank you, Representative Tlaib, for your unwavering dedication for the working class, and thank you for being here to support our courageous UAW comrades.
Thank you so much to Brandon, who has been a brother in this fight, not only in Detroit, really across the country. Right here, I always say to folks, and Brandon's heard me say this over and over again, but Detroit births movement. And you can see Detroit Action on the ground every single day, trying to fight over assessment of property taxes, making sure people are not kicked out of their homes for less than $1,000 because they can't afford the inflated taxes. They're out there again fighting poverty in every corner of our neighborhoods, and I cannot thank them enough for their courage in showing up to council meetings in the state legislature and so much more. And, you know, fighting for the American dream, but really fighting for human dignity for so many of our families. You all know I am the daughter of the UAW. We're going to talk about the grandson of the UAW soon. But I'll tell you, as a daughter of the UAW, growing up with a father who with a fourth grade education came to the United States at 19 years old, you know, different language. He had a different faith that folks weren't familiar with, ethnicity. And he got on that assembly line in Downriver in Flat Rock, Michigan at Ford Motor Company. And it makes me sometimes tear up, but he said, Baba, that was the first time that I ever felt human dignity. And I said, why? He goes, because it didn't matter where I came from and what education level I had or what my faith was. On that line, we were one. We were one against corporate greed. We were one against those that want to literally extract from us our bodies, anything to, again, make a profit on the backs of our families. And so, you know, it is funny that a lot of folks know I'm the eldest of 14, and they always say to me, well, I think it was Michael Moore, famous filmmaker. He said to me one time, Rashida, how did you get straight teeth? And I said, and I smile widely as I can, and I say, the UAW. That's how I got straight teeth, because they fought for dental coverage at the time when I remember we got dental coverage. My dad lined us up, and we all went to the dentist for the first time. I mean, this is what being part of labor movement is about, being able to take care of your family. And so I'm proud to be able to join President Fain in this fight to really humanize what the impact has been on our labor force, especially UAW workers who have sacrificed so much, y'all, for our economy, to keep the big three afloat since 2009. And now that they make record profits, they're leaving the workers behind. And I've seen it over and over again. I never want to hear neighbors, they're working in the auto industry, especially because we're subsidizing them, we're trying to help them with this transition and everything, talk about, well, I got to go to the, you know, food bank line, or I got to work a weekend shift because, and I can't spend time with my family because the only way I can make ends meet is working 7 days a week. And so we are now blessed that we have a grandson of the UAW, you know, someone that has understood the stories like mine that I share. He's lived it. He's lived it through his lens of his grandparents, being part of the UAW and seeing what was possible, again, for workers in the United States. You know, I was at a plant in Trenton, at a local hall in Trenton, and, you know, I could see the sea of workers out there, different ages, y'all. I mean, some in late 50s, still working, back hurting, you know, just tired and so upset. Because in 2009, they said, you know what, we're going to get a cost of living adjustment. We're going to take it out. We're going to create these tiers. We're going to do all this. And, you know, some people are not going to be able to get pensions, all this stuff. And the workers said, okay, we're going to help you all. We're going to take this hit. That was 2009. It is 2023. And every single contract since 1948, look it up, has had cost of living adjustment, had had COLA. That's just one example. It had COLA, y'all, until 2009. We are in 2023, and we got to beg people making billions of dollars to say we got to have cost of living adjustment, especially now when we know inflation is killing our family. To think that I met a young girl on the east side of Detroit working at Stellantis telling me it took 10 years. This little girl understood 10 years for her father to get on top of the tier. People don't understand these tiers. You don't get the vest. And the benefits, my dad, 90 days. Y'all, that was in the 80s. We're in 2023. And you're telling people 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you may be able to get on top of that tier. Doing the same job as anybody else, if you should be getting this, paid the same, again, the same wages. What I love about President Fain right now is, you know, sometimes he does these speeches, how to go. I call that one ready to rumble. Speech, or I call that we've had it speech, or what's the other one? I love the one where he basically says something like record contract, record profits, record contracts. He is consistent in repeating what the workers are saying. Because I'll tell you, I got elected in 2019, y'all. I went in the union hall and they told me what was going on with tears. I said, no way. The American people actually don't know that this happened. If I'm getting elected in 2019 and I'm starting to hear about the impact of tears, imagine the rest of the country. They are now for the first time hearing there's no cost of living adjustment in these contracts. There's no, wait a minute, you don't get a pension? Everybody knows if you worked at the big three, you got a pension or retirement or got to retire with human dignity. What has happened? What has happened is they have taken advantage at a time in 09 and thinking they can go ahead and keep riding that train. Well, I'm sorry. We're not. That's enough. It is enough that they keep continuing, again, making profits, banking off the backs of our workers. And President Fain, and understanding that, not only from coming from the Midwest, yo-yo, we really rule when it comes to movements and labor. He understands from Indiana down to the West Coast to everywhere that what needs to happen. Because if the grandson of the UAW remembered how it used to be, and the daughter of the UAW remembered how it used to be, and we're in 2023, and we're seeing us going backwards, he understands what's at stake. And like he says, you know, this is not some sort of deadline next week. This is not, you know, a reference point. It's literally like the day either you're with us and you're going to support the request of the workers that had your back in 09 or you don't. And so I just really appreciate President Fain. Again, he has been at plants. He has been in local halls. He has marched. He has done practice strikes. He's on the ground. And I love watching him, even when it's really long days, stay until he's talked to every single worker in that hall. And that's the kind of leadership he brings to this movement. And he brings the urgency that I think all of us have been waiting for in regards to where we can go with the UAW. So I really appreciate it. With that, I'm so proud to be introducing President Fain.
Thank you, Congresswoman Tlaib. Thank you for all your work, and Maurice and Miranda and everyone just for inviting me on here. You know, it's exciting. It's an honor to be on here with all of you. And, you know, we are 5 days away. And at this point, I'll tell you, we're 4 days away. You know, this day's pretty much hit. And, you know, I'd like to tell you things are moving quicker than they are. You know, we've been meeting through the weekend. I spent the morning at GM and the afternoon at Ford, and heading to Stellantis tomorrow morning. But, you know, things are moving, but they're moving very slow. And we got a long way to go in 4 days. And, you know, but our membership's energized. I mean, I'm excited. You know, we just had our first direct election in our union's history. And so, you know, with the new slate of new leaders coming in, myself being one of them, you know, it's the first time, you know, we've really been able to really the memberships had elected their top leaders and had people that represent their interests and put that number one. Not to say people in the past haven't, but direct elections hold leadership accountable. And I've always been an advocate for that. So it's great to see that happen. And, you know, the thing we've done, I wish I would have had a year. I wish we would have got this election done a year ago, but it's pretty tough being sworn in at the end of March and running a bargaining convention the very next day. And basically at that point, we were already in the planning stages of this fight that we're in now. So, you know, we've done a hell of a lot in 5 months, brought in some new faces, some new people, some fresh ideas. And we've ran our first contract campaign with the membership. It's never been done in my 29 years as a UAW member. Typically, we go into a contract, we just have our demands, and we wait and see what happens, and we figure it out, you know, at the deadline. And so, you know, I'm very proud of the work that so many people have put into this, you know, and our Congress people that have supported us, like Rashida and Debbie Dingles, and just so many of the different reps we've had out there, Haley Stevens, that have, you know, they're in a fight with us. And, you know, and that's you know, one of the biggest things we've done differently, too, when we talk about endorsements and stuff, is you know the people that are there. You know the people that are there for you that are in the fight with you. And, you know, I'm always proud to stand with these reps and these leaders, because that's what they are. They're leaders. They don't forget their roots. And that's what this moment's all about. You know, I say this over and over publicly and to our members, this is our generation's defining moment. And everything we do at this moment is going to affect not just the UAW, it's going to affect many workers in the working class throughout the whole spectrum. And not just us at this moment, it's going to affect generations to come. You know, UAW jobs used to be the gold standard. The big three jobs were, you know, when you got a job at the big three, it meant something. It was life-changing, and you knew you were going to be set for life, and not just your work life, but through retirement. And that's no longer the case now. Our workers that hired in since 2007 do not have pensions. They do not have post-retirement health care. It took them years, many of them 10 years, to get the full pay. And so, you know, this round of bargaining, you know, we made a lot of sacrifices during the Great Recession, and this round of bargaining, you know, we're asking for double-digit increases in pay. We're asking for cost of living to be reinstated. We're asking for a return to our job security provisions that were suspended during the Great Recession. We're asking for retirement security for the majority of our members. The majority of our members in Big Three do not have any retirement security. and we're asking for security in this transition to electric vehicles. You know, we support a green economy. You know, we have to get behind this. We have to have a planet we can live on. Anyone that doesn't understand where we are in this, you know, in the green economy battle, hasn't looked outside lately, in my opinion. Clean air and clean water, we need it to live. And so, you know, but the biggest part of this with the transition to EVs and the green economy is we expect this not to be a race to the bottom, and that's what it is right now. It has to be a just transition. And you know, the craziest part of this, you know, is our tax dollars are funding a massive portion of this transition to electric vehicles. And on top of that, you know, 20% of our workers in the big three are powertrain workers that work on either engines or transmission type work. If we don't secure this work, and we don't secure it at a living standard, at big three standards, you know, it's not going to be a good future for anyone. And so, you know, I talk about, you know, how our tax dollars are funding a big portion of this transition, just as back in the economic recession, you know, our tax dollars again bailed these companies out. And the sad irony in this is our tax dollars bail these companies out, and at the end of the day, the workers make all the sacrifices, and then they get left behind. So we are in the fight of our lives, you know, with the biggest threat to the working class, to the poor, and to our communities and our nations, and that's corporate greed. It's what's driving inflation. You know, you look at vehicle prices. It's interesting. People say, oh, if we bargain for these things and we get these things, you know, it's going to drive up the cost of vehicles. The price of vehicles in the big three and overall have went up 30% in the last 4 years. Our wages went up 6%. Inflation went up over 19%. We went backwards. But there's one group that didn't go backwards. The CEO's pay went up 40%. And the, you know, again, we talk about this. Labor costs equate to less than 10% of the cost of those vehicles, of building a vehicle. You know, companies could double our wages and not raise prices and still make billions in profits. So, you know, look at since the pandemic, sales of vehicles have been down, but profits have went through the roof. And, you know, we ask people, how does that happen? It's one simple thing. It's corporate greed. It's price gouging. And now, in retrospect, now that we're asking for our fair share, the companies want to blame the workers for these prices. It's ridiculous. They've made a quarter of $1 trillion, $250 billion in the last decade. The big three have made $21 billion in the first 6 months of this year. And that's why our battle cry for this set of bargaining is record profits should equal record contracts. You go back to the sacrifices our members have made over the years. During the Great Recession, we were blamed for everything that was wrong with these companies. Everything that happened was put on the backs of the workers. And so we made tons of sacrifices. We lost cost of living allowance. We lost all the job security provisions. Caps on temporary workers were lifted. We created all these different tiers of workers who, you know, do the same job on the same line for all different rates of pay. It's ridiculous how far back we've regressed. We are 14 years away from the Great Recession and a decade of massive profits, and our workers are still going backwards. You know, our workers, our members were declared essential during COVID. You know, our workers put their lives on the line to build vehicles and to deliver. And some of our members lost their lives through that battle. And, you know, it goes back to recently, one of my favorite sayings I've heard was John Stewart. He said, you know, when corporations fail, you pay for it. But when they succeed, it's all theirs. They socialize their losses and they privatize their profits. I go back and back to that because that is such a true statement of what the hell has been going on in this country and with our economy for over 40 years now. You know, one COO for Stellantis, you know, recently had the audacity to state as he sat in his second multi-million-dollar mansion in Acapulco that the workers needed to accept economic realism. And you know, the economic realism they want us to accept is the companies make billions in profits, the CEOs and the upper leaders of these companies make millions in salaries, and everybody else can scrape paycheck to paycheck to get by. You know, and all this is due for one reason, so some asshole like Elon Musk can shoot himself out into outer space. I don't care about that. It does nothing for society. It does nothing for this world to make this a better world. So, you know, now you've got the companies and their corporate media sponsors that carry their water that are doing what they do best. Now they're trying to make everybody fear how if the workers get their share of economic and social justice, it's going to wreck the economy. You know, they say a strike in the big three will cost this economy $5 billion a week. And you know what I'd say to that is, I'm damn glad that somebody finally recognizes the value that's created by our members' work. You know, and it's really interesting. You look, there's a really similar parallel to this time. And you go back to the end of the Second World War and back in 1945, inflation during the war had soared to 45%. And so basically, you know, it rendered, you know, worker pay increases completely meaningless. And back in August, during the war, there was a wage increase cap that was imposed by the government. And so in 45, President Truman lifted the wartime 15% wage increase cap. And within days of that move, Walter Reuther announced to GM that the UAW wanted a 30% increase. And he demanded that GM do this without raising the prices of vehicles. And these claims were even backed at that time by the director of the Office of Economic Stabilization, who confirmed that the auto industry at that time could afford a 50% pay increase without raising new car prices. And there's a quote that Reuther said back then. It really summed up everything then, and it sums up exactly where we are now. But Reuther stated that, and I'll quote this, "The economic facts of life prove that wages can be increased without increasing prices. Increased production must be supported by increased consumption, which is possible only through wage increases. The industry can pay higher wages out of the high profits it is making." I mean, that's the end of the quote. You take that quote and put that in today's terms, it is exactly where we are today. So, you know, when the talking heads speak about our economy and they speak about worker justice wrecking the economy, it's not that we're going to wreck the economy. It's that we're going to wreck their economy. And that's what people need to understand. That's what they're talking about. They don't give a damn about the economy we're all living. They just don't want to interrupt their economy. So, you know, our members have high expectations, you know, and a decade of record profits will drive that. And you know, our union has a recent history in the last 20 years, maybe longer, of typically bargaining, aiming low and settling lower. And throughout the campaign and throughout since my election, you know, I made a pledge that those days of aiming low and settling lower are done. I've never heard of anybody going into bargaining asking for less and getting more. So, you know, we are done. I've heard this. Our battle cry used to be, for the 29 years I've been a member, the battle cry of our leadership was, "We'll live to fight another day." And when I hear those words, I get pissed. And those days are over. Another day is here, and this is our time, and it's our generation's defining moment. And so we're here to claim it. And we are on the right side of this fight. And it's time for everybody to pick a side, politicians included. It's either you're either with the billionaire class or you're with the working class and the poor. And I know what the right side of that is. And so, you know, our time is now. And if we don't get our justice, I can guarantee you one thing. Come this Thursday at midnight, there will be action. So, you know, I encourage you to stay tuned. And I appreciate the opportunity to be on here. And look forward to more dialogue. Thanks.
Thank you, President Fain. And next, you know, you talked about the sacrifice of the workers of UAW. Next, we have one of those workers, Jeremy Lamb, who's a Toledo assembly plant worker, who will tell us from the ground the sacrifices and the fight that has to continue on.
Good afternoon. Once again, thanks for having me. I'll give you a little history and a little backstory on, you know, me at the plant. I've been with Jeep for 10 years now. As of May, that was my 10th year. This will be my third contract, and each contract is a very pivotal moment as it projects our future going forward. One thing is, I was one of those that came in at 1578 back in 2013, where most of the senior workers that were there were topped out at 28. The next contract we had went into was 15, and it really didn't 15 really didn't do much for our wages. However, when we went into the 2019 contract, you know, our senior workers took the back seat so we can get to where they were at. So that would bring us up to equal pay. However, at the same time, we still had those TPTs that were left behind, as they say. So because they weren't hiring, they're paying things and benefits like that were locked. At this current time, I don't receive a pension. I receive a 401k that's, 6.4% of contribution for the company, but it's kind of controlled by, you know, the way the market moves. So, you know, it's, you know, hoping that the economy stays stable enough to, you know, there's something to come out of there with, but there's no guarantee. So it's riding on hope. In the plant, you know, we work 6 days a week. Since I've been there in 13, we do 10 hours a day, you know, 6 days a week. Yeah, there's down periods where, you know, we might have some slow movement, but since I've been there, you know, we spend more time in this plant than, you know, honestly, we do with our own families. You know, even, you know, like I said, you know, looking at the senior workers who state how, you know, things were when they had their COLA and things like that, you know, of course we don't know what it is because, you know, we never experienced that, but to know that was something that they gave up to keep these corporations afloat and to allow them to move forward to the profitable point in which they are at now. And it's like, we did this for you. You know, when I didn't have it, I gave it to you. So, you know, share the bread. And, you know, they're playing keep away. And so, you know, looking forward, you know, we're on a countdown and it's been no secret to what's coming next. And is, you know, here on the floor, you know, is that something we really want to do? No, but we're going to do what we have to do because guess what? We did, we did and, you know, some senior did what they had to do to keep you guys afloat. And so at this point, you know, there's no more just taking what you're going to give us. There's no more just sitting down and saying, I guess that's all, you know, all we have to get. You know, we sit back and we watch our coworkers frustrated. We see the tears in the eyes. I mean, you know, the parenting time that, you know, some of you missed out, sporting events you missed out, recitals you missed out because, I mean, you don't really have that time off because, you know, you're in there sacrificing that time to make sure that they have the product, you know, to put out to the people to get the profits that they have while they sit back and they celebrate, you know, and pop their champagnes or whatever, where, you know, you're going to the grocery store and barely can afford to get that food put on your table. You know, I mean, there's no secret that, you know, the price of things have gone up. And, you know, some of us, you know, it's a real struggle. This isn't a movie. This isn't an act. This isn't a scenario that, you know, we're scripted for. This is real life. And, you know, at this point, I think the frustration has built up so high, it's to the point like, we got to do something, and this time is now. So it's either, you know, you're going to listen or we're going to take a stand. And I don't, you know, like I said, it's not something you necessarily want to do, but it's something you have to do. And, you know, there's no backing down for what's next. So, I mean, you know, we all stand together, and the support for each other is real. So, I mean, we have to do what we have to do, and they've done what they've had to do. So if they, you know, think that, oh, you know, we're going to sit down this time, it's different. It's different. You know, we have the community to back. We back each other. And that's part of the reason, you know, for the red shirt is to show the support of the solidarity within the UAW. Because, like I said, it's been a fight. You know, I mean, some assemblies, you know, standing on your feet 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, I don't care what pair of shoes you got. The best pair of shoes ain't going to hold up. So, you know, we go through things like that, you know, hands cramping. You know, you go in there aching, I mean. But with no retirement, it's like you scared to retire because it's like, when was the last time the retirees received something? They haven't. And so it's like, you know, oh, we know what the CEOs receive because they boast and they brag about it. But, you know, we have people who can barely make ends meet. So we got people who's turned into government programs to help pay utility bills, you know, to, you know, make it to the next month. So right now, said across the board, I mean, said we had, I honestly at this point, we have nothing to lose. You have backed the cat into the corner. And so, you know, you can either work with us or you're working against us. And unfortunately, it's at that point, but, you know, said this is what we got to do, what we got to do. So.
Thank you, Jermaine.
Oh.
Thank you so much, Jermaine. Everybody give it up for Jermaine Lamb. The front lines of this fight in Toledo. Let's give it up for President Fain. And everything that they said, we feel it everywhere. This is a time for solidarity. This time it's different. Our people are united. Community, labor, a worker anywhere, that fight is a fight for workers everywhere. Thank you so much for stealing the spine of workers everywhere. We're in this fight with you. And as I've often said, solidarity is truly a verb. We need each and every one of you to back up the UAW workers in their fight for a fair contract. Now we turn to other movement leaders to share with us what solidarity looks like and how all of our fights are connected. Your next speaker is a television writer and a member of the Writers Guild of America East Council. Please welcome Josh Gondelman.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Good evening, everyone. My name is Josh Gondelman, and like many of your other speakers tonight, I come from a union family. My mother is a teachers union member, and my father was a glazer in the Painters and Allied Trades Union. Today, I am a member of both the Writers Guild of America and SAG-AFTRA. Film and television writers have been on strike for more than 4 months now, and performers have been on strike for almost two. When the writers first went on strike, there was a real element of fear that our message of wanting to be compensated fairly for our work and to ensure a stable and sustainable future for our profession wouldn't break through to the public. Unfortunately, those fears didn't become reality. Over the past months, working people across so many industries have stood with us. Writers, actors, crew members, sure, but also teamsters, laborers, warehouse workers, baristas, teachers, and many, many others. Because people understand that we're all part of the same fight. We're not just writers and actors negotiating against studios. We're workers fighting to secure our fair share of the enormous profits that our work generates from these massive corporations that employ us. And that's what we're trying to do as well, right? The big three companies have been reaping billions and billions of dollars in profits, profits that are funneled upwards to CEOs and executives, and profits that you generate with your hard work and expertise, UAW members. Without you, these companies truly are nothing. What you're asking for is more than reasonable. Fair compensation that provides a life and a home for yourselves and your families, and the security to be able to retire with peace of mind when you're done working. The only thing that's standing in your way is the greed of these companies. But together, your will is stronger than their avarice. If you go on strike this week when your contract expires, you will not be doing so alone. You'll have the full force of the labor movement at your side and at your back. We will be with you, the workers across America have shown up for us, and the way we've stood alongside hotel workers, flight attendants, UPS drivers, and more. Our strike has been taxing and frustrating, certainly, but thanks in large part to the solidarity we've seen from all corners of this movement, I remain confident that we will win. You too will get the contract you deserve, and we will be cheering you on when you do. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Josh. Your next speaker is Shiva Rajbhandari, a proud CWA union member. Shiva is also a freshman at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and a Green New Deal for Schools organizer with the Sunrise Movement. Shiva.
Thank you so much. And thanks to all the folks at the Working Families Party for having me here and to the UAW for being here and to everyone for attending. Like you said, my name is Shiva Rajbhandari. I'm a climate organizer, a student, and as of last year, I'm the youngest elected school board member in this country. And I'm excited to be here with you in the fight for a better future, but I know that I wouldn't be here without unions. I remember my freshman year of high school. It was clear that this country was not prepared to face the climate crisis. And inspired by unionized workers on strike for fair contracts, I joined millions of young people across the globe to go on strike from school, demanding our leaders finally do something about global warming and mass ecocide. My friends and I, we began organizing in our community. Much like the UAW, we led with dialogue, hoping our school district would be open enough to our ideas to listen, but unfortunately they refused. So then we took to the streets. We went on strike from school, we wrote op-eds, we showed up at our school board meetings, and we garnered statewide press coverage. And our local teachers union had our back the whole way. Our board members were furious, but nevertheless, we forced our school district to pass a collective commitment on clean energy and set in motion a process to transform our facilities in the face of the climate crisis. Not only that, but the political momentum we built together in Boise allowed me to run for the school board my senior year of high school and hold the district accountable to its commitments. So as all workers across the country stand together and fight for what they deserve, they should know that my generation, Generation Z, stands with them, that the climate justice movement stands with them, that we have their backs as they stand up to corporate greed. We all know that unions make this country stronger. And in the face of the climate crisis, we must work together for a just transition to a clean energy future where all can prosper. In the end, the fight for living wages and fair labor practices, the fight against fascism and for a government that acts in the interests of the people, and the fight against the climate crisis and the fossil fuel barons who profit off of it, these fights are all one in the same. There is no climate justice without a just transition and good-paying union jobs for all workers. There is no Green New Deal without a healthy democracy where our government works for working people. Solidarity between our movements is not just raising our fists and cheering one another on. Solidarity is recognizing that there is only one movement, one collective movement fighting for a better world. And on behalf of the Sunrise Movement and as a union member, organizer, and a human being, I'm proud to stand today with the United Auto Workers in this fight, in this movement. Hot labor summer may have just ended, but find out fall is just starting, and the big three execs are going to find out what happens when they mess with working people. So thank you for having me. Let's do this.
Thank you, Shiva. Let's do this. Find out fall. Ask about us. Thank you so much, Shiva. Next up, we have Joseph Ivargis. Joseph is the executive director of Our Revolution. He has spent his career advocating on behalf of the working class as a union organizer, most recently as a strategist for Good Jobs Nation and the Fight for 15 and a Union. Give it up for Joseph. Joseph.
Thank you, Maurice. Good evening, brothers and sisters. My name is Joseph Kibargis. I'm the executive director of Our Revolution. Corning started our revolution to build a grassroots movement to make sure that our government stands on the side of working people, not the corporate class. For far too long, Democrats and Republicans stood together to push a neoliberal free trade agenda that offshored jobs and gutted the American labor movement. Brothers and sisters, that ain't right. And that's why we stood with the new UAW to fight against plant closures and layoffs at GM Lordstown and other factories. That's why we walked the picket lines with union members during the 2019 GM strike. And that's why we pushed the Biden administration to pass legislation to invest billions of dollars in creating good union jobs in the United States of America. Brothers and sisters, today all our struggle continues. And know that all revolution members all across the country are standing in solidarity with you as you take on the big three at the bargaining table. Not only that, not only are we standing with you, but we're calling on the Biden administration to stand with you too. We're calling on President Biden to leverage this massive infusion of federal tax dollars for the green economy, for electric vehicles, to pressure the big three to honor the right to organize, to raise wages and to hire laid off union workers and to reopen factories. Our message to the White House is simple. Mr. President, creating green jobs is not enough. We need you to guarantee that our tax dollars create more union jobs in the United States of America. And look it, now is the time. The 2024 elections are right around the corner, and this is the opportunity for this administration to deliver on the promise to be the most pro-union administration in history. Mr. President, this is your shot to show that you're going to fight like hell for America's working class. This is a which side are you on moment, Mr. President. And all revolution members are on the side of UAW workers. We're on the side of the Working Families Party. We're on the side of Move On and Sunrise. And we are going to organize to hold our government accountable. Because you know what, brothers and sisters? When we organize, we win. Thank you, Maurice.
When we organize, we win. Thank you, Joseph. Give it up for Joseph Gavarges and all of the work that our family at Our Revolution is doing every single day. And I want to thank everybody who's joined us. And this is an organizing call, right? So you can't leave an organizing call without our action steps. So everybody get ready for a concrete action you can take right now. You could dial right now the number 318-300-1249 in order to let the CEOs of the big three know where you stand, to know that you stand with workers, that you stand with justice, that you stand with our brothers and sisters and the UAW and workers everywhere. Again, that number is 318-300-1249. This is a defining moment for workers everywhere, for people who are committed to a humane world, for people who believe that human potential and solidarity is so much more important than profit and greed. The lie of neoliberalism has come to be seen by all people. What the future will hold can be determined by all of us, by the workers. That is our job. That solidarity is required of all of us. Again, this is a moment for all workers. This is a moment for all people of conscience to come together in solidarity. And if you want more action steps, and there'll be more action steps after, UAW to 30403 for updates and to learn how you can help in the coming days. Again, that is UAW to 30403. On behalf of the Working Families Party and all of our partners in the struggle. We salute you. Let's continue that fight. Solidarity.
Wow.
All right. We made it. We made it.
There we go. We made it.
Yes, we did. All right. All right.
So, that being done, so this last week we had counteroffers. Oh, go ahead.
No. That was just telling me the meeting is over. Go ahead, Scotty.
Oh. Okay. Well, we had counteroffers from all three. Definitely the Stoyanis and the John Mohner's offers were almost identical. Basically, they're saying to all of us, flipping us a royal bird. Put it that way. Great big royal bird. And that's how they feel about us. And I agree with Mr. Fain. That's how they feel about us. They're not worried about us and what we've given up to support them to make these companies record profits. People tend to forget that. The COLAs we've given up, a lot of us go into a six-day schedule, alternative work schedules. My goodness. Raises. We hadn't had a raise for 13 years until the last contract, and that was 83 cents for an hour. Pension increases. Haven't had one since 2007. These are things that the presidents before the one we have now have given up. They've given concessions, and the ones that did this, they're either dead now or they have went to prison, unfortunately, and they're out now. This was Mr. Jones, 27-acre, $1.5 million home. 2 months spread in prison, and that's what you get. So, not to mention, they all have multiple pensions from different places now. So,
all right.
You said.
Yeah, let me just say, we got a lot of callers. Push 1-315, I'm going to put you on. We had 810-734, I think, was Carrie. A lot of people joined us. Those who are wondering about our chat room, it says a file or directory cannot be found. So, Blog Talk got one thing right and the other thing wrong today. So, no chat.
Hello. Am I there?
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
You're there. Hello.
I understand a lot's going on. About what's going on. But nobody's talking about the workers that are laid off. I want to strike. I know we're going to strike. We need to strike. But I'm laid off. What happens to me? I don't get strike pay because I'm laid off.
Right. From what I understand, you will continue to get strike. You will continue to get unemployment and sub pay.
Okay, my unemployment's done, so I get my sub pay.
From my understanding, yes, we called our union hall last week, and that's what we were told. If our unit didn't strike and we ended up getting laid off due to the strikes and the work stoppage, that we would get unemployment and subpay. So if your unemployment ran out, yes, you'll continue to get subpay until that runs out.
Okay, but that was because of your work stoppage. We're indefinitely laid off.
Right, but you were already laid off before the strike. So
you haven't
exhausted
your benefits, have you?
Have I what?
You haven't exhausted your benefits. You would stay on that benefit package until those are exhausted, I presume.
Okay. My union couldn't answer that question to me.
From what I was told from Local 598 in Flint, Michigan, that is what we were told.
Okay. I just want to know.
I understand completely. I want to know, too.
Because right. I'm laid off and my unemployment's gone and I don't know what I got to do. I know we're going on strike. We're prepared for that. I just want to know I had to prepare more or not.
If you are going to stop getting your benefits, you will get a letter in the mail. I know in the past I have stating that you are terminated from General Motors. And then you will go over to your... Then you'll go, or I'm sorry.
That's okay.
From where are we? And then, you will then go over to your union hall and sign up for strike pay.
When you're laid off?
If you get a letter stating that you're terminated.
Okay.
Sometimes that's what happens when, you know, you're out on sick leave or you're laid off and if your benefits end or whatever while we're on strike.
No,
sometimes
they'll
send you that letter.
Let's
match the title. You're from Belvedere, ma'am, right?
Yes.
Okay. And there's been no communication from your regional, or have you contacted your regional office if your local is not able to give you proper information?
We have. He said we fall under something, but he couldn't pull it up to say, okay. And I can't read the contract book because it's too complicated for me. But
have you been able to communicate with other Union Brothers and Sisters that were in the same situation from Belvedere when you guys were laid off and idled? Have you been able to communicate with them maybe to potentially get answers towards that plant, or have you guys been communicated by the international vice president? For Belvedere?
I have not been from the vice president. Our president, our newly elected president, has put out emails, and he has not much to say. And most of the people at our plant, because I'm tier one, and the rest of them were tier twos, but the tier ones that have transferred from other planets to Belvedere, there's nothing out there. It's like, because a lot of them took the buyout and they got the retirement package, and I don't qualify for it. My husband doesn't qualify for it. So,
ma'am,
just,
I really do. By the way, my name is Jesse. I would do if I was you. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying if I was you, I would be going to my local hall every single day to deal with a benefits rep until I get satisfied with my answer, because this is your livelihood. And make your presence known every day at your local. Make it known if you're able to be near your regional office, fine. If not, send emails. Get responses in writing. If you're not getting responses, that is also showing time and date stamp on your trying to communicate to take care of your needs. But that's
I just want to know what's going to happen because we're indefinitely laid off. We don't have a return.
If your situation is a part of bargaining, then like any of us, you'll have to wait that out. But if it's a situation with your unemployment needs, that's a benefits rep.
Right.
And we also have international benefits reps, too, if you're not getting anywhere with your local.
I ain't worried about my benefits. I just don't know. If we go on strike, do I still get subpay?
You'll get it until they tell you that you don't. If you're not going to get it, you'll get a letter. And at that point, you'll go to your – is your local still open?
Those are questions for a benefits rep. That's why I was trying to
she'll get
go towards that route.
Jesse, you'll get sub pay until she has no more sub credits left. She has to be aware to watch her sub credits too.
Okay, I'm really confused on the sub credits because they took them from me.
Sub credits tell how many weeks you're allowed to collect sub pay, and they don't reflect if you got 52 credits. That doesn't mean you got 52 weeks. When I was getting sub pay, they were taking 8 and 10 credits per paycheck. So what I thought would be was gone in 6 months.
Yeah, happened to me too. I got 5.2 checks out of 52 weeks. So.
Amen.
Okay, but my other question is, so we don't get strike pay because we're laid off.
Like Jesse said, you need to get hold of your...
He would not get strike pay because she's already been laid off.
No.
We've been laid off before the strike. I was laid off in March.
Right,
yeah.
That's what I'm
right.
saying. So I don't know how your sub credits are holding out. In fact, it should tell you on your sub how many sub credits you got because you need to pay attention to that because that's going to run out. And when it does, like Jesse said, you need to get to your local and somebody needs to explain a few more things to you, my dear friend.
Yeah. I'm listening.
No.
Well, don't let them give you the runaround when you go there. Don't leave until you get your answers right.
I got my answers. They took my sub credits from me. They started taking my sub credits when they laid me off, when they made me transfer, when I still could hold the plant. And they said, nope, that's the way they do.
Who's they? Your hall?
The union. My union in Belvedere. Local 1268. That's what they said. You're indefinitely laid off. They made us take an indefinite layoff to transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And they took... Some people got no sub-credits. Some people got their... go right back into the plant, and some people lost subcredits, and I lost an extra week of subcredits because they laid the plant off a week during that.
How long have you been laid off?
Since February.
March?
End of February.
Okay. Isn't our subpaid benefit 3 years, you guys, or 2 years?
I am 21, if that's how you want to say it.
They say 2 years. That's what I was telling you. It goes by what it's called credited service, and you will get 52. Then when you get 10 years, it's supposed to go up to, I believe it was 104, but that, like I was referencing to you, that does not mean that each check is one credit. It depends on how many people are in the system taking subpay as how much they can charge you for each check as far as your credits. I would go to your local and find how many subcredits. It should be on your pay stub. They always were on mine.
I got my pay stub has two different ones.
Has two different ones?
Yes, I got 24 years in.
I've never heard of my subpay being dependent on how many people are getting subpay.
Well, it is, and I can tell you
guys. She needs to learn how to read your book. No, she needs to learn how to read the benefit book. It spells that out pretty contractually, young lady. Again, you need to read.
And it happened to me because I had a job under the table, so I just saved these credits. I had 52 credits, and by the time I decided to cash in, it was 10 credits per check. So I got 5.2 checks, and I go, what the? The union didn't tell me this at all. They didn't warn people. But it's depending on how many folks are in dipping into it is what you get charged.
We don't have a definitive answer for you. We could all try to throw our hat in the ring and try to help you out a little bit, but ultimately, I think Jesse's right. You're going to have to go to your local or to the regional and really camp out there until they give you an answer. And then if you're not happy with that answer or the regional answer, then you go to Detroit with it.
Okay. I'd rather go to Detroit because I know I ain't going to get the answer from there.
There you go.
Well, unfortunately, I transferred from Detroit out there voluntarily, and they take care of their own.
Right.
No, we understand that, too.
But
yep.
My other question is, we don't get strike pay when you're laid off.
I'm not sure. That's a different position. None of us have ever been in that. Like I said, that'd be your local to answer that.
I got laid off because of the strike.
Ma'am, as far as strike pay, because you are on layoff right now, and collecting unemployment, you would actually have to refer to your state's unemployment laws and guidelines, which you should be able to find if they have an unemployment website. Because here in Michigan, it might be different. In Michigan, we can't collect both. There's very, very, very fine guidelines on something like that, but overall, you can't have both. But you need to really refer to your unemployment agency and the laws of the state that you're in. That's not something that we'd be able to resolve. And like I was saying,
What was that?
Yeah, go ahead and contact them. You said your unemployment's running out?
It ran out. I got my last unemployment check. Then my local president cannot answer for people that are on definite layoff from Belvedere because just about everybody in that plant is in the same predicament.
Your benefits rep should. If not, you need benefits department of the UAW International. The person that answers the phone is not going to be your source, but your source will be a UAW International benefits rep. You try to get that resolved through your local benefits rep, and they're not able to give you the answers you're looking for. But that's the end road there, is looking up the laws for your state's unemployment, and then as well as contacting International through the main hotline on the Internet and on their Facebook page, and then go from there on asking for an International benefits rep.
Okay. Because I got to return home soon. Which is in Michigan. And Stellantis ain't letting anybody...
Come on.
Stellantis ain't letting anybody return to Michigan.
Hurry up. Get out of here.
I think we may have someone else that have some questions. Please, can we move on?
Yes.
Not trying to be rude or disrespectful, we can't have one person taking up the whole show.
Go ahead.
That's just not fair to others. Thank you.
Go ahead.
There we go.
Thank
you. Okay. Next. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello. Am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I recognize the voice.
Oh, hey, guys. Pleasure to hear your voices right now. I don't have a question, but I do have I do need help with something. I got a call today from someone very reliable, very trusted, that I'm GMCCA. My name is Gene Dutchman. a.k.a. Johnny Bravo. I work out of UAW Local 1753, General Motors CCA. And the concern is the live that went on the other day with all the proposals, right, the information that was given about GM CCA is incorrect. GM is actually offering us nothing at all. And a little history of GM CCA. We make $30 million a month, and in the lifespan of a contract, that's $1.44 billion. And we're tier two. After 2015, right, we we just don't make anything. We cap out at $25 an hour. It takes 7 years to get there. I've been with GM for 5 years, hired in, and I'm a vice president of 1753, right? And I'm making $23 an hour. This proposal that they've given us is absolutely nothing, not even for our legacy workers. So the important thing, that the help that I'm asking for right now, is that I need awareness for GMCCA and GMCH. We need to be a part of this movement. We're in the contract with Assembly. And the 2019 strike, we've gotten nothing out of it, right? We were out there every single day with everybody from GM, the rain, the heat, the cold, and we were completely forgotten. With this contract, we cannot be forgotten. This tier needs to end. And out of the General Motors contract this year, we need one pay scale, one job, one contract, one pay scale. And the GMCCA world is a little different than Assembly. We have the same GM policies. We have the same GM everything. The difference is, we don't have much oversight, so the abuse that goes on in GMCCAs is rampant. I like to call them the Wild West of GM, right? And as a representative, I can tell you, the brothers and sisters of 1753, for the past 3 years, we've gotten over a dozen managements fired, including a plant manager and a labor relations. So we're a fierce force. But we need help being heard because we don't have the numbers of Assembly. So any awareness we could get straight across the board from all big three, CCA, CCA, CCA.
Johnny, this is Stephanie Riley.
Hi, Stephanie. Oh, Stephanie, hello.
Hey.
I know you.
So you've been with General Motors for 5 years, right?
Yes.
Okay. So back in 2008, I believe it was, the CCAs were made that anybody who worked at a CCA had an opportunity to flow into General Motors and to be a top-tier employee. They could either come over to General Motors or they could stay there because they determined that the work at your place was a lot easier than the work we were doing over at the other places. And they wanted to make that a tier two wage facility. So anybody who wanted to, you know, make more money could come over. So that's
so we
where
still
the
have that
started.
We still have that opportunity. We could still transfer to Assembly. The issue we're dealing with is to say that to put it out there that we do easier work in Assembly. Now, I've known Jesse here. He was one of my first contacts when I was a temp in LGR, Lansing Grand River. I met him on the door line, and he's been my inspiration in this, right? Because the way he behaved and the way he conducted himself on that door line with management inspired me like you couldn't believe, right?
I'm not saying that I should get paid more. I'm just saying that's where it started.
No,
right?
Hear you.
Okay.
I hear you. I'm just responding because you're not the only one that has that comment. I get that quite a bit, right? Now, as I've worked in both Assembly and CCA, I can assure you, CCA, the work there is so much more dangerous. We're working on 20,000-pound machines all day long, fork trucks moving around everywhere, and the incidents that happen to us are a lot more dangerous than what's going on in Assembly. You've got loss of fingers. You've got loss of limbs. So the job is more dangerous, and it's a lot of heavy lifting. Like, we lift up to 50 pounds every second for 9 hours straight every single day. And the wear and tear on the body is just insane. Now, I remember when I was on the door line, Jesse could tell you, I did grab an injury on my arms because it's the door line. It's crazy, right? But in CCA, it is just insane amount of work, and they whipping us like it was slave labor. So that's why we need our quality of life to go up. Now, in 2008, I hear what you're saying, but anyone that was hired after 2015, those are our tier two within the CCA system. So anybody from before 2015, they cap out at $31 an hour. We cap out at 25, but it still takes us 7 years to get there. So we don't want to be forgotten because our quality of life is dwindling, and it's getting real hard to keep these guys up there fighting, right? That union solidarity,
right?
If we continue being forgotten.
One more comment is that, I just totally lost my train of thought. I wanted to say that 2019 contract, none of us really got anything, right?
I hear you.
We didn't, none of us. So,
The 2019, the employees in CCA, from before 2015, they got a 3% lump sum bonus, and they got quite a bit, right? Even though it's not much, anybody below 2015, absolutely nothing. And this contract, the proposal, GM is offering nothing to CCA at all. So the information that was on that live the other day from Sean Fain, it was incorrect. Yeah. CCAs were not offered anything. The mistake was all the numbers for CCA were meant for GMCA. That's why I'm out here today trying to get as much awareness as possible because we need help.
Sean has said, go ahead.
And we do want to open up the doors for assembly to come to CCA because we need experienced people that have the contract minded and the solidarity minded. You know, we need all that experience.
I agree.
Sean said that they wanted to bring the CCA and the GMCH. They want to bring them into the master agreement.
Yes.
Between 2015 and 2019, you guys were bastardized.
Yes, we were.
And the previous leadership let that happen. And
yes, they did.
Draconian what they did with the pay scale. You know, start at 10. It was at 15. I think it was the start pay was 10 and some change, and then you topped out at 18, and the numbers grew for the 19 contract. But you top out at 21 to 23. I mean, top after how many years? Eight?
Seven.
Yeah. The president's aware of that. He said multiple times he wants to bring the suppliers, the GM suppliers, back under the master agreement, which would change that language for you guys drastically, right?
So the thing that cut our throats the last time in 2019, if you forgive me for saying this, my job right now is to get awareness out to everybody that we need help. But what actually cuts our throats is we don't have the numbers as assembly does, right? So when it was time to ratify that contract for 2019, we were voted against from our own membership, right? And that's why I'm trying to get that awareness out there now. So for the ratification purposes, that if we when we do get a contract ratified and it does come down to a vote, what we're asking and what I'm begging for, right, is please, if there's no gains for CCA, please vote no because we sacrificed a lot the last one and we are going to sacrifice a lot this time. But this time we got to be, you know, our soldiers on the ground getting that awareness out all over the place, all across the nation, from Rancho Cucamonga all the way to Philadelphia, right? Because a lot of people do not know who we are.
Well, I feel like that's, you know, part of the thing I've been preaching. Like, we don't need CCAs to be different. We don't need Aramark to be different. We don't need subsystems to be different. We all have to be made whole and we all have to be made one because when it comes to contract time, we're all voting on different things. There's no unity in that. And it, same with the ballot box, same at voting time during the elections, and the, and even inside the plant. Because these temporaries are just voting like they're told because they don't have any skin in the game. Right?
Amen.
And they're outnumbering
us.
So we're not, now we're losing out big time.
Well, and, how the union busted from the inside out.
Absolutely.
Facilities.
I think anybody who hires in should come back to the same, at least, not, if not better, to the same standard he had when I hired in. It was 18 months to get the full pay scale. But with,
right,
with you guys, I walked the picket lines with my brothers and sisters over the GMCH there on Miller Road, the old Miller Road SPO. I walked over there on my off time. Me and my wife both did. Like I said, they were mishandled. But you weren't the only ones that got shafted in this last contract. Brothers and sisters.
I think I got a misconnection. You guys are breaking
Lordstown
up.
Out. You there?
Yeah.
You there?
We did
yeah,
our show
Lordstown.
From there, by the way, Scotty.
What's that?
I just can't understand why they think it's okay.
Okay. I think I have a bad connection. I can't hear anybody. I'm going to try to call back in.
Okay.
All right. Please do.
I was saying, right, Scotty, that we did our show from Source Creek.
That's right. We did do a couple shows in there, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
I forgot. Thank you. But, yeah, that's the other thing, you know. On the, like, places on the subsystems, you do the subsystems, they were left out. But then when we voted yes, if you did, I voted no. I'll have you know adamantly I voted no. And I tried to teach our brothers and sisters on the picket line why to vote no, too. Anyway, when they voted yes and they passed that national agreement by, what, 1%, 1.5%, that put our brothers and sisters at Lordstown with no recourse. That was in our national – that was in the contract. If we voted yes, if that lawsuit and that plant closing continued, and also where Melissa's at Fort Wayne, that lawsuit went away, too, if the contract passed. This was our leadership that pushed that put brothers and sisters against each other. So, you know, there's...
Amen.
I'm just hoping that our president, who said he wants to bring the subsystems under the national agreement, the master agreement, be the way to go. And on the strike, yeah, real quick, on the strike, my wife brought a good point to me. They starved the temporaries and the tier two into a yes vote by walking us out for a 40-some day strike for nothing.
They did it on purpose.
Yeah.
We just can't let that happen again. To quote Ms. Riley, the sit-down circus can do it, we can do it, right?
I say we sit down inside the plant. Let's just sit right down inside, not walk out. Then nobody's going to be in there doing our job.
You know, I like that. I like that thought. And people don't realize, in 1937, the sit-down was illegal then. But
yep.
You barricade yourself up and, you know,
it.
I don't know what they do now.
I don't either.
Hello?
You're back on.
Okay. Hey, guys, sorry about that.
We're sorry.
Hey, so I was going to bring something up real quick, too. So, you know, I got to thinking about something. You know, with us going to direct deposit this time around, I'm wondering, with the Lewis system, whether it's updated or not, as well as the fact that, you know, you have to be a member in good standing to get paid on strike. And I'm just wondering if the dues per capita per local are not up to date, wouldn't that affect workers to go on strike potentially? I mean, it's one thing if you can't vote for an election and you find that out, but it's another if we potentially go on strike in 4 days and we have workers across the big three who may or may not be paying dues, but without their knowledge that they're not being taken out of their checks and then submitted to international. So
are you worried about
just
them
something that I was thinking about?
I actually
I'm worried about our Union Brothers and
issue
sisters.
Going on right now.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. We're actually dealing with that issue right now with the Lewis system in my plan, 1753. All our new members for the past 3 years, labor relations hasn't done their part of the job, which means they didn't input our fins, like our information. So what's going on now is we have about 50 people who had no idea that their dues were not coming out. And we're finding out just last week that international, because of the direct deposit, sees them as bad standing. And we're scrambling as hard as we can to get these guys strike pay, right, in the event we walk out. And it's great. It's like the thought of us walking out is greater than us not walking out. So it's imperative that we find out how to solve this issue, because our belief, right, my chairperson and my president, we strongly believe that GM did this on purpose to cause division in our plant, but now it's causing a bigger issue because now we have our most vulnerable members with the lowest pay, with a possibility that they won't get strike pay, not to no fault of their own.
Why isn't it their fault? Get a pay stub. Wait a minute now. You get a pay stub.
You do.
And all your deductions are on your pay stub. Why was it no one questioned it until now?
So that's a good question.
Union dues wasn't coming out.
That's a great question. When they find out, a lot of people did find out before it was brought to their attention, right?
Okay.
And the issue is we just had our election. The old financial secretary stepped out. We got a new financial secretary. But the issue is nobody knows how to correct this issue, not even from international. So we've been on the phone with all members from international trying to resolve this issue, and it seems like nobody can, right? Because from my understanding, once you put a new member into Lewis, right, once you put that social and that GMIN in there, if there's any issues with that, we can't put a second one in or we can't add that social security number no more, right? So that's become a big issue in our local, wondering if it's going across the board. But our membership was responsible. They are telling us they do want the dues to come out. The issue is international and our local can't seem to get them taken out and get these guys in good standing.
I don't know.
And this has been going on. This has been going on for the past 6 months. I got grievances out there and everything on this subject. But that procedure is too slow.
If dues isn't being taken out of their check, they can always come up to the hall and pay you.
And we could do that, right? But we still got to get them in the system with the direct deposit. If they're not in the system, right, we could pay our financial secretary because a lot of these guys are making payments. But every month, like this month right now, their dues still are not coming out, right? So even if we pay cash and stuff or give the money orders and the checks, technically under international, they're still in bad standing because we can't fix the Lewis system, if that makes any sense.
I'll talk to you about it later. But,
please. I'll tell you this. My new financial secretary, he's working around the clock. Me and him were at our union hall all the way till midnight last night, and we were there at 8 o'clock this morning trying to get this to work because that's our main priority for this moment is to get these guys strike paid.
Right, for sure.
So unfortunately, CCAs, we do run into these issues because nobody, and I'm not talking about you guys in assembly or anything. I'm talking about GM and international, right? We are bastardized. So it's hard to get solid help out there and resolve these issues, especially in a timely fashion. We're now down to 4 days, and we still have this issue not being resolved. So, Jesse, thank you for bringing that up.
Did you talk to Margaret?
Have you gone to international about this?
They're on the phone. My financial secretary is on the phone with different people every day from international. He was waiting for a phone call today, but they didn't call. So he's going to blow up the phone tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. for the one individual that might be able to help us. So he's going to be on the phone all day tomorrow.
Okay.
Holy cow, what a mess.
And that's the CCA, because we're not under the umbrella. Even though we're in the same contract and we have the same policies, right, we don't have the same oversight. Like, anything goes there. Not in our plan anymore, because we restructured that by, you know, doing what unions do best, fighting, right? But the other CCA plans, like in Flint, Davidson Road, they're still dealing with all this abuse. They're still dealing with this incompetency. And it's not just our plant. Oh, we're suffering. We need help. So I appreciate you guys actually listening.
Very interesting. I said very interesting.
Yes. And that's why I've been out there. And I'm out there as hard as I can. I'm in Black Lake just about every other month, trying to get the awareness out there, trying to get people networking just to bring the awareness so people know who 1753 is and they know what CCA is.
Right.
CCA, GMCH, LOC.
GMCH. And even with Ford, Ford and Jeep, right? Chrysler, Stellantis, with Mopar, they're in the same boat we are. You know, with their proposals,
right.
Their proposals were so insignificant, but that also goes to their legacy workers, just like us, right? But we got nothing this time. GMCH, they've been neglected. They paid lower than CCA. And then I don't know what Ford's function is with the warehouses and so forth, so I don't know the name of them, but I know they're in the same boat we're in. So this is the whole big three dealing with these issues. And if I knew more information about the other two, I'd be happy to give that.
So CCA's had their own bargaining team to begin with, correct?
Correct. We're part of the GM negotiating team. But we do have our own sector in there.
You did, and when we were at the convention, they didn't announce them. They didn't, you know, have them come up on the stage.
No, they did. They did. Arnie Stephenson. She was up there.
How many of them were?
Did I go?
Were they?
She's our only
kids?
Negotiator up there.
Okay, so that's what I'm talking about, because in the beginning I had heard that you guys had, like, your own team, like a financial secretary, a chair, I mean, separate from GM bargaining.
We are part of the GM bargaining negotiation team. She's up there with them. And she's working right under Mike Booth right now.
Okay.
So she's up there. She's with the whole GM team. She's with the assembly negotiators and the GMCH negotiators. So we're part of the whole big picture because we're in the same contract.
It, like John said, that you have a division that's a whole separate facility, a whole separate different property area, so you don't end up crossing paths, traditional assembly workers, and
Correct. This
is the company's trying to keep assembly workers from having knowledge of these facilities, which many of us are aware of them, because then the subject becomes not just unity with benefits, wages, and all of that sort, but also the biggest thing for production workers is wanting the right to transfer to those facilities. And so the companies don't want us really to be aware of it. And
correct.
The only reason that we're aware of these LOCs that popped up is because they're attached to the facilities, the production facilities, and you wonder why you can't go in those areas or transfer, you know, so you're at least educated about the LOC, but GMCH and CCA I'm going to agree, they are forgotten. As a matter of fact, when we were at LGR together and you started as a temp on the line with me, I had no idea that there was a CCA. Never heard of it, and I actually don't think I heard about it until you were laid off indefinitely from production and you were able to get hired in at least at CCA, and then we started talking about what CCA was and what you guys do.
Well, that's the funny thing. I'm glad you brought that up. When I was laid off, I didn't reapply or nothing. I just got called back to CCA, right? So when we apply for the positions, right, if we don't apply to a specific place, they'll either send us to CCA or assembly, right? And so all the temps, when they are in that pool, they either go into CCA or they're going to assembly. Now, a lot of guys that was laid off with me from LGR are in CCA with me. So the reason we were so fierce these past 3 years is simply because I had that assembly knowledge, especially from you, Jesse. So I took that knowledge into this place, and we all had to educate them and fiercely fight management, because when I say it was hostile, the words can't even express how disgusting and unethical and how abusive this place actually was for the past 3 years. I mean, I promise you this, that GM literally had the worst of the worst working for CCAs, because nobody is educated in these places. We don't have that, you know, education in a plant from 1,500 people, or that education sitting in a plant with 2,400 people like Delta, right? So, fortunately, the temps from assembly did go to places like this with the knowledge we have of the procedures and policy, because those are violated on a daily basis, on an hourly basis in these places. And we made such a loud noise in our plant that Mary Barra herself came by just 2 months ago just to see if it quieted down, because she couldn't believe all the aware hotline calls skyrocketed and all these supervisors were being fired.
Wow. You know, can see that because go ahead. Go ahead, Jeff.
Did you say somebody from labor got fired?
Yes. Yes, and then the plant manager, Pedro Trinidad.
Wow.
So it was a war. So all our guys with 47 years of seniority, they came to our meetings and they shouted that these are the worst times in this plant's history. The district that I covered at the time as a committee man, we taught them how to fight. We educated them. We got creative and we were disobedient. We were mischief legally, and we crushed these guys. Right, because that's what GM does. When there's a challenge, when there's adversity in front of us, we step up to the plate and we take it down, right? Because we're brave. We don't step down. We step up.
Right, right.
And you know, and we fought a lot, and we're a group of assassins in there.
You know what?
Right.
When I went over to visit the Miller Road SPO, the GMCH. There were times when me and my wife went over there, there was like two people on the picket line. That was it.
We're fortunate. I was telling Jesse earlier, we don't have that many people. My plant has a little over 200 people in it, right? So 602 actually in the 2019 helped us fill our line, and they're going to help us again this year because we just don't have the bodies. So we are unified with our sister plants, with LGR and 602. And I'll be on their lines with my megaphone screaming out, CCA, CCA, please don't forget us. You know, we love you guys. Don't forget us.
Right.
But the reality is, though, we deserve a good livelihood as well. If we're going to destroy our bodies, deal with this abuse, and then having to do sit-down strikes because they want to bring in unmanned vehicles to drive around, right?
Right.
We're up to these challenges, right? And there's two districts in my plant. Our district, we don't use those unmanned fins. As much as they want to, every time they even think about it, the whole plant sits down. We do not work until those fins are gone, right? Now we got so brave enough that anything. So I'll give you an example. Just last week, one person was put on notice for putting a committee call in. The entire department stopped working, right? So now if they hit one of us, we're all affected, and we all reply, and we all fight back. That's where CCA 1753 is right now. And but this fight, we need all the help we can get, and those guys do deserve all the help they can get because those are some badass union brothers and sisters right there. They are fierce, they are competitive, and they will stand up to any challenge. And if assembly ever needs help, we got your back. You got 200 guys with bats in their hands. We got your back.
Hey, Don. Don?
Don? Oh, Don? You might want to go for coffee or to the restroom. You know,
yeah, Don's asleep at the wheel, folks, again.
I hear the toilet flushing.
I think we only have 15 minutes left for the show.
That's correct.
I really do appreciate you guys for giving us the opportunity to put this out there today.
Hey, we love hearing everything from everybody. We're one union. That's what I want on the Brother Payne stand. And what I don't understand, how can you bargain with GM yet you don't fall underneath our freaking umbrella? That's stupid. If you're sitting there at the table, with be included, in my humble opinion.
And for I'm here, by the way.
Hey, everybody, check the switchboard, brother.
I did. It's on. I got 586 on.
Hi, everyone. Hello.
Well, hello.
Hello. Hi, it's Jesse Kelly. Hey, Jess.
Hey.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit about CPA, too, and draw awareness to it because, you know, being skilled trades out at GM, I know what they'll do to ostracize the smaller groups because we don't have the amount of numbers that it takes to win contracts. So that's why I just wanted to, like, come on and say we have to stand in solidarity with each other. An injury to one is an injury to all.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Solidarity forever.
Last year, 4 years ago, or whenever in the hell it was.
I agree, Jesse. And you know, Aramark has their own contract. LSC has their own contract. Why don't if they're not going to have the same as we do, why don't they have their own contract?
Well, right, because it's just all game, right? Divide and conquer. By having their own contract, different expiration dates, we can never come together. We can never strike at the same time. We can't completely eliminate them.
So I have a question off topic of CCA that goes for all of us under the master agreement. Something that I'm not understanding that's been mentioned by President Fain multiple times for negotiating is to negotiate the right to strike against plant closures. Aren't we trying with this contract to actually be able to strike if necessary, as well as not crossing picket lines if necessary? So I don't understand that the focus on if a plant is going to be closed or announced to be closed, that we have the right to strike or not.
I think because if a plant closes in the middle of our contract, we're not allowed to strike this in the middle of a contract, right?
Well, we need to get rid of the no strike clause, though, altogether.
Yeah, I think
we need to get rid of the no strike clause.
I believe they are negotiating that because I've heard that quite a few times from up top. So I think that's in the talks right now.
That should be a non-starter for bargaining, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because when Lordstown went out, like I said, it wasn't just the CCA and the GMCHA that took it. Fort Wayne and Lordstown. Fort Wayne had a lawsuit going because they were bringing in temps and not letting people transfer in, seniority people transfer in. And then Lordstown was closed. When General Motors announced that they were going to close Lordstown 3 years into our contract, we should have went on strike because they violated and they broke our agreement. But our president then didn't have any fire in his belly and let it go to a decision before the membership to let Lordstown go and to end the lawsuit with a yes vote. So,
this was something that wasn't even discussed.
That protects us against the fancy words they use too, because with Lordstown, they didn't say they were closing it; they just unallocated it.
Correct.
Idle.
Yeah.
Correct.
Allocated it.
Wordplay.
Yeah.
They didn't,
so we just need to say that there has to be investment.
Right. They did not say they were going to idle them or close them. They said that the work had been unallocated.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, wordplay. But still, it violated your contract, okay? At that point, there was no work for those people to go. You were going to close that plant. No matter what word you're using, people still went out and ended up going to the membership for a vote. When you violated our national contract, we should have went on strike at that point. We didn't.
Which is why we honestly do need the job banks back. That's why, like, everyone's kind of disregarding that membership demand, but it's really, really big. If you get the job banks back, it doesn't matter what fancy wording they use. If you lose your job due to them playing these, like, corporate greed games, they still have to pay you. Right?
Hey,
you know,
well,
they
hey guys, I just randomly, because I was opening my contract book to see if I could see the language about the no-strike clause, and I actually happened to come across the UAWGM administrative letter that said, "Dear Mr. Dittus, pursuant to our commitments in document number 13, the following facilities have been identified as plants closing during the term of the 2019 GM-UAW National Agreement, Baltimore Transmission, Lordstown Assembly
yep.
Complex, Warren Transmission, and CCA Fontana. Very
yep,
truly
I'll
yours, Dr. Scott Sandiford, Vice President of GMNA Labor Relations." Now, how the hell could we vote against the contract when that shit's in an administrative letter and not in the white pages for us to be able to see ahead of time? And we had how much time to vote on the contract? Because we know that we would have never voted on that. They closed
that's
Transmission right. North. We would have never voted yes on a contract for that either.
My aunt's opinion was the $11,000 signing bonus.
What did you
we
say,
need
Jimmy?
We need the contract brought before us before we talk on and vote on it. And also, we cannot, I repeat, Sean Fain, if you're listening, don't leave any open, unprinted documents or appendixes. If you got a number that's been removed, so be it. Remove the whole number. We don't want no more numbers where that disappearing ink shows back up. Thank you very much.
Oh, like paragraph
the
ways that they
I
get away
know.
With some of this has to do with that little statement that I keep trying to inform everyone about. The company has a right to run its business as it sees fit. It can go before the executive board of the UAW to reopen and renegotiate the contract. Those
after we've
things
ratified
are
it.
Happening behind our back. As long as that clause is in the contracts, because they're going in, they're reopening up a ratified contract. They
correct.
Don't come back to the membership and say that we need to revote. Because they, the executive board, are making the decisions for the membership. And it is legal for them to do so as long as that clause is in the contracts.
Which clause are you talking about again?
The clause starts out by saying the company has the right to run its business as it sees fit.
Isn't that paragraph,
paragraph
eight?
They can go to the International Executive Board and request to reopen and renegotiate the contract.
Luckily, we got a new international e-board.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
That's paragraph 28.
Okay.
Paragraph 8. Paragraph 8 for General Motors.
Oh, paragraph 8. I'm sorry.
Adrian.
General Motors.
Hey, hold on a second. Adrian, hold
yes.
on a second. Adrian.
Yes.
I believe that we've talked about this before, and didn't you mention that one of the ways that they keep this language in any of our contract books is to change what page it's on in the book? So you overlook
yes,
it.
Yes, that is
yep.
correct.
Until you address
yep.
the situation, and then they say, no, it's in the book. But go
that
ahead, Gene.
That is correct. But no
okay.
one ever
you
tells
were saying
you,
about those.
Oh.
I'm sorry. You those are in the white books. I just looked at the last one from the 2019 contract because we got a copy of the white books. It's in the supplemental agreement, Exhibit A, pension plan, Exhibit B, life and disability benefits program. And then when you look in the table of contents, it doesn't show it. But when you go to the back of the book, it says, hold on a second. I've stepped outside because
well,
the dogs are
the
barking.
Point is it's not front and center for the membership to have
no,
a reasonable
you have nowhere
chance
to
vote
for
on
it.
It.
But you have
that's
to know
bullshit,
where to look for
though, because that's white pages, and that wasn't readily available for all members. And in the past, but we are moving forward, in the past, we have not been given time to even digest a contract, and I'm sure that that is definitely going to happen this time. I'm positive it's going to happen,
Jesse,
because
to my knowledge,
President...
To my knowledge, the white pages were a PDF online that you could look at, right?
Not at the time, though. Not during the time of the ratification.
Not unless, yes. Not unless somebody got a hold of it and shared it across social media.
Yeah,
that
we got
the only way to be aware of it.
Those letters are in the back of that book, of the white pages.
Okay.
I thought they were.
Adrian was
going to
say
talking
something
about it.
Hello. Adrian, go ahead and finish what you were saying.
Thank you. as Jesse had said, because we have had this discussion, that statement moves around in the books. So-called white pages, as you all call them, that we used to call them rough drafts, are always posted when the highlights come out. They are there before the highlights. You can go You can go and see what they have omitted and what they have added.
Yep.
Correct.
The 2019 contract, the closures were in the highlights. They were even discussed at the rollout meetings, and it was still voted against.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It was still voted
for. Yes, it was.
But I remember speaking at the rollout meeting.
Bring those contracts up like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're there.
I remember
comparing that with your highlights.
We've got 2 minutes and 45 seconds, folks.
Can I say something
real quick,
just as a spouse?
You go ahead.
As a spouse, just real quick, I would highly encourage any and every spouse, be out there and pick a line with your spouse, support them. If you can bring your kids out there, you know, during their strike time, go out there and do it. But the last year, or 4 years ago, I remember the CCA had reached out, or SPO, whatever it was then, had reached out to 598 and requested people to come and help fill the line. You know what? You shouldn't have to wait for your local to ask to help go fill those lines. Just go do it.
Yeah.
Just show
Amen.
Up. And then educate them. Educate those people that are there. That's a job of, and I'm going to throw this at the legacy workers especially, and the retirees, because you've lived it, and you've lived it longer. Go educate these people. And don't sit back and go and piss and moan because the temporary said this, the temporary said that. And if you're taking an active role in educating them, then you know what, you can sit there and you know, piss and moan. Don't get me wrong. But the ones that piss and moan and they don't do anything to help educate these people, it's on you. But I encourage families, get out there with your worker. And if you can't...
Real quick. One last thing, real quick. If you can spread the word, please have everybody post on social medias across the board that CCAs need help and that we cannot be forgotten, GMCH as well. But we need CCA awareness. All the talk out there right now is GMCH. We need CCA awareness. So please, everybody, please help us get that awareness out there.
Yeah.
And Don's the only retiree I know that was out there on that line. You know, when I was out there with my husband, there was one other spouse or two other spouses, and that was it. And Don was the only retiree I've ever met and saw on that line when we were out there. And we weren't out there
on
the scheduled time.
Get out there and talk
to
the community.
That's
call
where
every
you
church,
are.
Call every
because
school,
I went
and
to
ask
several,
for help to fill our lines.
Yeah, I went to several lines in 2019.
And
I don't
think you didn't. I said if you did, great, awesome.
Yeah.
But there was very few, very few.
Yeah, it was a lot
of churches.
It was a lot down here that was going to
different every church in your community. To ask them for help, send a congregation, give them signs. I told my guys if our line